Good afternoon. I thought I'd begin my remarks by saying a little something about my personal habits and moral practices. I don't drink hard liquor. I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't regularly use tea or coffee. I don't take drugs. I'm a confirmed heterosexual. And I'm a cultural conservative. I think it's fair to say on the basis of this that perhaps I'm more puritanical than many of the people in this room. I think, though, in the political realm, we must beware of what my colleague on the panel, Mr. Sobrin, has called the Puritan heresy, namely the heresy that whatever is immoral should also be illegal. I want to insist, of course, that I don't by any means accept the converse that somehow whatever is legal is moral. Certainly, if one is inconsiderate towards one's spouse, this is legal, but it is most certainly morally reprehensible and unkind. So I want to divorce myself from that viewpoint. This afternoon, I'd like to raise the following question. Why is it that a person like myself, who agreed with most of what Professor Nisbet said last night, is reluctant to call himself a conservative? I don't think that the answer is that in moments of exuberance, Professor Nisbet is wont to suggest that we take Elizabethan England as our model for a political and social order, although that may help in suggesting where the problem lies. I think the nub of the problem is this. Libertarians believe that true virtue, a life that is truly virtuous, must be the outcome of free moral choice. Therefore, libertarians seek a regime of liberty in which they can make these choices. Now, some particulars may help clarify this. Libertarians would not say that charity that is extracted by the Internal Revenue Service is help virtuously extended to those that deserve it. An established church that's supported by taxes and to which the citizenry are made members by birth is not really a free expression of the spiritual side of man. An individual's quest for spiritual, cultural appreciation of arts and literature is hindered by a government that subsidizes and nurtures an approved art. And that government hinders individuals' intellectual development as well by doing so. Most importantly, the overall moral project, living a truly happy life, in the sense that Aristotle and others spoke of this, is a project that involves self-discipline and the overcoming of temptation, is a project that is not fully possible in a society pervaded by state paternalism. Aha, you might say. Well, we all agree with this. This is nothing new. We don't favor state paternalism or whatever. Conservatives agree with you. Well, I think that some conservatives do agree with me, and I think that really those conservatives are probably more properly classical liberals or libertarians. But some conservatives do not agree with me, and they are different. They are real conservatives, and I think the examples I am about to give you will make that quite clear. Earlier today, we heard from Walter Burns, and in Walter Burns' writings and in his speech, he made rather explicit his view that the government should seek to promote the virtue of citizens. His endorsement of Horace Mann and public schools lay precisely in this direction and was, in fact, quite in contrast to the vehement criticism of public schooling that was expressed by Professor Nisbet last night. I think it's also certainly in contrast with such libertarians as Isabel Patterson, as Herbert Spencer, with their eloquent criticisms of government training of children. Now, it's not that libertarians somehow think that, by some necessary corollary of their position, that moral education is unimportant, or that no libertarian has ever addressed moral education as a topic. Certainly, libertarians, by the nature of the discipline, the persuasion, are talking about politics and the state and so forth, so they don't necessarily end up writing about the subject, but some have. Herbert Spencer has written a very famous essay on moral education. John Locke addressed the subject. In fact, those of you who are readers of the Political Science Reviewer perhaps remember that in the bicentennial edition, there's a long and interesting essay on John Locke on civic and moral education. So I don't think that this is a subject that somehow naturally libertarians are indifferent to. The fact is, though, that libertarians think that state training, state indoctrination, harms, undermines intermediate institutions, the church, the family, and so forth, destroys them, wrecks their independent character, and wrecks their proper role in society. To go on to a second example, conservative Jeffrey Hart calls for congressional investigation of religious cults and oddball religions. Libertarians would say no. A religious person owns his own mind, owns his own Bible or holy book, owns his wealth which he donates to the church. Church owns its buildings, its relics, its ceremonial equipment, its shrines. For the government to come in to investigate, to regulate, as Hart suggests it do, libertarians, and I certainly would include myself, would say is an injustice, a violation of rights. Investigate crimes, yes. That is, investigate violations of person, property. Investigate religion, no. Conservative Kevin Phillips says news media are very influential, too influential. And corporations that own them should be attacked by antitrust laws. Libertarians say no. Libertarians would say that publishers and broadcasters own their equipment, hire their reporters, sell their product. The government should not interfere. This brings me to another point, the point of the Bill of Rights. Last night, Professor Nisbet suggested that we could well do without the Bill of Rights. And the late conservative thinker Wilmore Kendall used to talk about the desirability of repealing the Bill of Rights. Frankly, libertarians would not agree. Libertarians think the law enforcement agencies should be strictly confined to upholding the human rights to life, liberty, and justly acquired property. Libertarians do not think that it is enough to rely on rivalry between the different branches of government. I think we've seen how well that works to prevent invasions of liberty. Libertarians want the rights of man enshrined in the fundamental law. We should remember, I think, when we think of Wilmore Kendall, that Wilmore Kendall is a man who eloquently argued that the Athenian assembly was quite right to condemn Socrates, since Socrates was questioning values that the government upheld in Athens. I must say that it seems to me that using Wilmore Kendall's approach, which is certainly a consistent and a conservative one, although not one of every conservative, Kendall would have to say that the Sanhedrin was quite correct in condemning Jesus. I don't think that's a position that we would want to hold. Now, an excellent final example that I think summarizes the conservative opposition to a social order in which one freely chooses virtue, and the conservative's belief that somehow virtue is something that government can grant. This whole phenomenon is something I think that, to rework a phrase from Daniel Bell, one could aptly call the cultural contradictions of conservatism. An excellent example of this can be found in George Will's attack on legalization of marijuana. Now, Will says that he is opposed to Jeffersonians who will say of marijuana and of the drug culture that no belief or drug picks my pocket or breaks my leg. And then Will goes on to say that he believes that legalization lends itself inexorably to moral indifference toward the self-destructive values of the counterculture. Will says, self-government presumes certain character traits. Any democratic government that neglects to nurture such traits and is indifferent to the weakening of them fails to maintain its cultural prerequisites. In the end, it will be no more durable than smoke, marijuana smoke, is what he's thinking of. This, I think, is a pretty fair summary of this position, that somehow virtue is bestowed by governmental action or properly nurtured by it. So I have to take the contrary position that I think is really very well stated by Frank Meyer in his Manifesto in Defense of Freedom. And I would say that he also addresses in that book quite well some of the questions of community that have been raised in talks earlier. Meyer there criticizes conservatives, specifically Robert Nisbet and Russell Kirk, and says they're wrong in seeing dehumanization, alienation, rootlessness, and so forth as resulting from a loss of community, a decline of voluntary groups, and so forth. Instead, Meyer correctly points out that these phenomena, rootlessness, alienation, are the product of state-enforced community. That the loss of our full humanity is a destruction that has been done by the Leviathan community and not by some drawing away from seeking out the association and sociability and work that we can do together with others. And furthermore, Meyer points out, I think aptly as well, that Edmund Burke and his followers believe that the state is a divine organ without whose positive action men cannot achieve virtue. Kirk, for example, although something of a moderate on this whole issue, believes it is the duty of the state to advance the culture of society. This is precisely the state-nurtured culture that I think Professor Nisbet so eloquently criticized last night. Likewise, Professor Burns wants obscenity laws, in large part so that the government can help define what is art and what is trash. I really think that we have to choose the alternative if we're going to be sensible, namely that we want virtue chosen in freedom. I would like to leave you with two quotes, one from Frank Meyer and one from another libertarian, Albert J. Nock. Meyer says, "Social order is a good social order to the degree that men live as free persons under conditions in which virtue can be freely realized, advanced, and perpetuated. Unless men are free to be vicious, they cannot be virtuous." And Nock said, "The practical reason for freedom is that freedom seems to be the only condition under which any kind of substantial moral fiber can be developed. The individualist aims at the production of a race of responsible beings. Freedom, for example, as authoritarians keep insisting, undoubtedly means freedom to drink oneself to death. But the individualist points out that it also means freedom to say with a grave digger in Les Miserables, 'I have studied, I have graduated, I never drink.'" So I leave you with this thought. The libertarian is not somehow necessarily indifferent to the moral realm. The libertarian believes that the government is not a good moral teacher. The government does not have clean hands, and structurally it is not inclined to be moral. The state is an immoral teacher. Let libertarian conservatives, classical liberals, and libertarians of all sorts join together to roll back the state and give the individuals and voluntary associations an opportunity for moral development. Thank you.